Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Coming up over the next 60 minutes, you will hear from Shane Doan. He's the Arizona Coyotes Chief Hockey Development Officer. You know Shane Doan, former NHLer, of course. Everybody knows Shane Doan. Earlier this week, named Assistant GM for Canada at the upcoming World Championships. We'll talk to him about all of what that entails and where they plan to get players, and the answer may surprise you. Bottom of the hour, Brian Burke, Pittsburgh Penguins President of Hockey Operations, joins us as the Penguins continue to roll. Justin, before we get to the Maple Leaf game, 5-3 victory over the Winnipeg Jets yesterday and all the issues that come out of it and all the discussion points. The latest news around the NHL. Calgary Flames have canceled morning practice today after one player tested positive for COVID. That player is now in isolation. Other players and staff have all tested negative. The team is scheduled to play the Montreal Canadiens tonight. Actually, we're taking that game national on a Friday edition of Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. There you go. So that was scheduled to get underway at 9 o'clock Eastern this evening, but it sounds as if they're going to wait until the next round of tests and those results come in before making a determination on what happens tonight. I don't want to say here we go again before it's time to say here we go again, but given what just happened with the Vancouver Canucks specifically and Montreal before them, I sort of greet this with a, oh boy, this isn't good type attitude.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that a player could have a positive test and exist in an NHL dressing room, you know, during the normal flow of the season without passing it on. You know, like I was talking with a friend who's with the Marlies the other day and was just talking about their situation. It's incredible, like the separation, the lengths they're going to keep these guys from one another, including having guys sit in different parts of the dressing room during games. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just, you know, from the showers to the weight room to the dressing room to the bench, like it's just too much contact with too many players.
So we cross our fingers for the Calgary Flames and everybody involved there, the players, the staff, management, everybody with that organization. And as of right now, that game is scheduled to go on tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern. Last night, Stars came out for the Maple Leafs, and that was Austin Matthews, that was Mitch Marner, that was John Tavares. I don't know if I'd call Jack Campbell a star, but he was really good last night. 34 saves. They chased Connor Hellebuyck. Like, it was a close game in a lot of ways all the way through. Maple Leafs get out to a 2-0 lead, and you say, okay, here we go off to the races. And then Winnipeg ties it. They take a 3-2 lead into the first intermission. Toronto does. What did you make of last night before we drill down here in the next few minutes about last night's matchup? Foligno, by the way. Nick Foligno with one assist on the empty netter at the end.
Yeah, you know, the reasons that we think the Leafs are good, you know, held true. The best players did best player things, and their defense looked generally pretty solid to me. You know, Campbell made a number of good saves. He had a weird night to me, because I actually thought a couple of the goals that went in, I didn't love them, but then he made some saves on some ones that that I wouldn't have expected him to. So it reminded me a bit of our boy Kevin Woodley that came on and explained his game, how there's a certain busyness to it that maybe isn't there with some goaltenders that you would call the elite of the elite, but it involves, you know, sometimes him making some great saves, and he made some very good ones last night and got the job done. He stopped enough pucks at the end of the day. Can't ask for much more than that.
Right, and that's one of the points we were making with Woodley as well. Like, does this team need an elite level goaltender, or does this team just need someone that can make the basic saves on a consistent basis? So outside of Jack Campbell, who stood out for you? I mean, listen, Matthews has the big night, his 34th goal, which was a beauty, 27 seconds in. Marner was full value. John Tavares. Where would you say, yeah, that guy or these guys were the ones that got it done?
Tavares, for me, has been really good lately. You know, I've talked before with Anthony Pacilli of Maple Leaf Hot Stove. I think he does really good work on some Leafs analysis stuff. And one of the things that he had mentioned on Tavares is that when he's playing well, you'll see him challenge guys to the inside and try to dangle guys, go inside out. And we saw that last night. We saw him turn around a Jets defender. I don't remember who exactly it was, but dangled. I think it was a Morrissey right to the inside, got himself a great look.
To start the second period, I want to say.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And so, you know, when he's doing that sort of thing, you can tell he's confident and he's on and he's playing his game. Like, Tavares is not a guy who's meant to put the puck in deep. He's able to make guys miss even though he doesn't have elite speed. So I thought he showed the way he's feeling last night, you know, putting points on the board again. When he's good, it gives this team this other element of depth, and I don't think he's been as good as he has been the past couple months in the previous, I don't know, year, you know, ahead of that.
You know, there's a number of Maple Leafs observers who will say that John Tavares isn't playing better lately. He's always played this good. The problem has been his shooting percentage has been embarrassingly low. And that's the only difference. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. I actually, you know, I've got an article coming on Sportsnet today about meetings, video meetings, and just kind of my insight on how they're made and how they're put together. One of the things I mentioned in that article is a divide between public perception on things like shooting percentage and what it's like when you're with a team. And so when you're the public, we say everything comes back to the mean eventually. Oh, he's going to shoot better. His shooting percentage is going to come back. It's just a matter of time. Bad luck. For players and for teams, the reason things often regress back to that mean are because they change things and they work on things and they improve and they recognize where things are different. Tavares is playing much better right now than he was playing because he's getting to the inside and beating people one-on-one, because he's shooting from better spots on the rink, and the puck starts to go in and you say, yeah, by the matter of math, it went in. It's like, no, by the matter of changing things, the math got better. So I don't think it's just a matter of luck. I think he's looking a lot better as a player, and that's making him look a lot more fortunate right now.
That's an interesting evolution of thought as well. That's like in baseball, where for the longest time it was all about Moneyball, and then when the Ben Lindbergh book came out, it all became about MVP machine and taking statistics to make players better. And it seems like the NHL, I remember the Maple Leafs, you know, talked about that with players like Cody Ceci. Maybe even you can make the argument with Alex Galchenyuk. You know, we can use numbers, use performance to make this guy better. At the end of the day, don't just fix your mind based on some of the stats that you've seen, underlying numbers or whatever that you've seen already.
What is that book? I want to read that book. MVP Machine. I haven't read
it's
that.
MVP Machine is essentially the modern, I shouldn't say modern phenomenon, the most recent phenomenon in baseball of taking statistics and using them to improve players, to identify areas of weaknesses and then go about correcting them. And a lot of it is about veteran pitchers rejuvenating their careers. A lot of it is about, there's a lot about Trevor Bauer in the book. It's a great read. I read it a couple of years ago. Written, co-authored by someone that I follow, one of my favorite baseball writers, a guy by the name of Ben Lindbergh. It's excellent. Borny, this is right up your alley. MVP machines are real good. Now, some baseball observers will say, hold on, he's too much on the Houston Astros, and this is, you know, before all the bang scheme stuff came out. So maybe a little grain of salt with some of it, but the basic philosophy is using numbers as a base to improve players. That's MVP machine. So the Maple Leafs face off against Winnipeg Jets again tomorrow, Saturday night, on Hockey Night in Canada. What do we expect, if anything, on Saturday from these two teams?
Well, you know, I'm curious to see if the Leafs can figure out Kyle Connor and Nick Ehlers. Like, it's not so much everyone else that they should be concerned with, but those two guys just look so dangerous. All the, you know, and I know they're great players and they look dangerous against everyone, but there hasn't seemed to have been much of an answer for those two. You know, I don't want to pick on the guy, but Galchenyuk standing right by Kyle Connor shoots another one in the net last night. If you're going to beat the Jets, you got to shut those guys down. You know, that's going to be the biggest challenge. So it's like McDavid and Draisaitl. How to game plan for those guys to make them irrelevant.
Do you have a thought on Nick Foligno last night debut?
Yeah, I'm going to say something unpopular. I didn't think he was great. You know, I thought he's fine. You know, he was. There's a couple times there was some miscommunication. It looked like with Mitch Marner, it didn't look like he had much pop to his step, and not. You know, I've watched Nick Foligno play. I know what to expect from him. I wasn't exactly expecting, someone with blinding speed, but he just didn't quite have it last night. And he said so much in the post-game interview. He said, you know, though Marner and Matthews, he said, carried him in the early going. He felt better as the game went along, but to start the game, he didn't feel great, and it showed. He didn't seem to have too much energy.
Yeah, on that. On that Marner goal, the one where Matthews feeds it back to him, the puck is rolling, and he fires it over Brossoit's glove, You know, Foligno was playing bumper cars by the boards with his team, with his teammates, to look like, trying to figure out, okay, where should I be at this moment? Where do these two guys want me? And then Matthews saves the entire play. Like, the entire sequence is completely saved by Matthews. Marner ends up getting the goal. So I know what you mean, but isn't that to be expected?
Yeah.
In some ways.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he's been playing on a Columbus team that has been out of it this season. Listen, we saw it boil over last night with the Elvis Merzlikins quotes. That's on a team that's been out of it for a while. We'll pick up that conversation in a couple of moments. Shane Doan joins us, Arizona Coyotes chief hockey development officer, but for the purposes of this conversation, the assistant general manager for Team Canada at the Men's World Hockey Championship. That is scheduled to go in Riga, Latvia. Curious about a couple of things here, and we'll get into it with Shane Doan, who joins us now. Shane, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is ours. A few things. May 21st to June 6th, Riga, Latvia, IIHF World Hockey Championships. One of the first things I think we all wondered is, where will the players come from? Do you expect any resistance from NHLers that have had a challenging season by way of having to observe COVID protocols all season long? And I'll follow it up after by asking you a question about, is there any chance that you guys end up taking draft prospects? But the initial question, Shane, where do you expect the majority of Team Canada players to come from?
Well, you know what? It's from the NHL. I mean, those are the guys that Canada usually takes. I've played on it in the past where we've taken guys that are considerably younger. Johnny Toews was my roommate.
Yep.
Before he actually got to play in the NHL, that the won Worlds and was great for us. So obviously, as a country, we have the very fortunate ability to provide incredible young players as well. But we're looking at the players that are playing in the league, and yes, it's not going to be the same as always. It's going to be a little bit different, as everything is this entire year. But at the same time, it's still the opportunity to represent Canada. It's still the opportunity to go over to the World Championships and experience something that, for me personally and for Louis, has been something that's really had an impact not only in our playing careers, but also in just our lives in general, with the friendships and the people that you get to know over there. And it's special.
I'm glad you mentioned Jonathan Toews there a couple of seconds ago, because as you mentioned, he comes in as a young hockey player, as a prospect, and was great in that tournament. So perhaps we shouldn't be surprised if draft eligible players, Owen Power would come to mind right away, the defenseman with Michigan, would show up on a Team Canada roster.
No, yeah, those are guys that are capable and able to play over there for us in this type of situation, for sure. We've been looking at everybody. And I got to know Owen and his family fairly well, and he's a guy that has obviously shown a lot of potential. There's a bunch of other guys as well. So it's one of those things that we would love to, you know, we're hoping that we're going to be able to fill everything up with the absolute best players possible.
What does that process look like for you guys, Shane? Like, I imagine you sit in a room and draw up what the dream team would look like, and then do you reach out to players themselves individually to find if there's mutual interest and just kind of check off the list until you have a team?
Well, I think there's an element of making sure you approach the general managers first, just because you want them to understand and to feel it's the players are under kind of their control for the season, and you want to be able to talk to them. And and then from there, yeah, you'd probably go through the players and through the player's agent, depending on how the relationship is. Sometimes it's them reaching out to you. Sometimes players will reach out and want to express that they want to play. And those are obviously that makes the situation so much easier, and it's exciting.
What's the setup going to be like in Riga at the World Championships? Are we looking at a bubble? What's going to happen in Latvia?
Yeah, it's going to be set up similar to a bubble. I've been there, this will be my third or fourth time I think it'll be my fourth time in Riga. The city itself is a very nice city. It's beautiful. You'll be able to walk around outside. You won't be able to go into any buildings per se. So that'll be a little bit different, but it's And you're going to have to be aware of everything that with the social distancing, and it's going to be very similar to over here. It's and our first priority is making sure everyone's safe, and that's Hockey Canada is doing an incredible job of making sure that set up the parameters to make sure that everyone can have a safe time over there, and at the same time really enjoy it and have an opportunity to experience what it's like to play for your country.
How are you adjusting to the managerial type position to, you know, from being a player and who's a part of all this sort of thing? I'm sure as a captain for years, you were doing a lot of player evaluations and team evaluations. Does it feel familiar and comfortable or kind of weird?
It feels kind of familiar and comfortable. It's I think every single player feels like they can do it. And then when you get put in the position, you're like, oh boy, maybe this is a little bit harder than you realize. And the thing you realize more and more is it's just about relationships. I mean, management is just about relationships and understanding and managing people's expectations and making sure that you're in a position to help them be successful. And that's really all. I mean, that sounds so cliche-ish and vague, but at the same time, it is exactly what it is. You just make sure that you give people the opportunity to be successful and encourage them and give them all the resources they need and support that they need to be as successful as they can be. And it's similar in that way to being a captain, where you're with your players and you want everyone to feel valued and important. And when they feel valued and important, it seems to bring the most out of them.
With Shane Doan, he's assistant GM of the Team Canada men's squad for the World Championships, May 21st and June 6th in Riga, Latvia. Now, I can recall talking to Colby Armstrong about this specifically, about what the World Championship means to a player, you know, once their career is done and they look back on the experience. I know that the World Championships, we all know this, the World Championships means a big deal and always has to European hockey players specifically. But when you talk to, you know, guys that played in the NHL, whether they won Stanley Cups, had success, if they have the World Championship, you know, experience, they look back on it fondly, and Colby tells, like, you know, wonderful stories and great camaraderie and big games, etc. What do, like, as part of, you know, explaining to a player, like, what this experience is like, can you share some of your experiences, Shane? Like, sell us here on this radio show on the experience of going to the World Championship from a player's point of view.
Well, I got to play with Colby over at the World Championships. We were on the same team, and that's, even that is a perfect example of it. Like, the relationships that you build with guys that you would never otherwise get to meet is absolutely incredible. And when you're in a situation, like, it's almost like being a kid. It's almost like reliving kind of that dream scenario where you're a kid going to a minor hockey tournament again, and all those incredible memories and thoughts that you have of winning a big tournament at a minor hockey tournament come flooding back. And it's really something that, for me personally, was probably some of the best decisions I made. Was every time Team Canada called me, I said yes, because I felt like there's going to come a day where no one's going to want me to play and I'm going to want to play. So that was probably as much about it as anything. But now, as I'm sitting down and going back over my career, exactly what you said, there was such an incredible experience for me. I took my kids to a bunch of them, so that made it even more of an experience for my family to kind of see everything that's going on. But it all goes back to the relationships I have now. I mean, the reason that I'm doing this today is because Louie and I did it together a few times, and we were roommates a couple times. I was roommates with Dan Heatley, I was roommates with Jonathan Toews, and those are, you start to feel like you're name dropping, but that's just what the experience you get to do when you get to hang out and do the World Championships, because it's the best players in the world at that time in regards to who's out of the playoffs, but they're still the best players in the world, and you get to be around them and you get to see them. I remember doing one in Halifax with, like, Ryan Getzlaff and Shea Weber and all these guys that absolutely are, you know, the icons of our sport, and you see the way that they mentally prepare and they get ready to do things. And it is one of those things that there will come a day where you wish you'd said yes. And that, I don't care who you are, I know it's not always the most convenient time, and it's a little bit more difficult with everything going on right now. But in the end, it'll be a memory that you'll never, ever forget. And I think that it's worth it every single time.
Oh, there's just no doubt in my mind, the thing you just said, that you'll wish you had said yes. These guys, after their careers that played, every player to a man talks about the amazing experience they had doing that. I wanted to turn the page and ask a little bit about Patrick Marleau just breaking the NHL's games played record. You were not far off. His total with 1,540 regular season games yourself. What don't people know about what it takes to play that many hockey games?
You know what? I don't think people appreciate how much you love to play. That it is, like, as much as it is a grind, and it becomes, because it's a mental choice to love it every single day. And that's what Patty has done. Like, even now when you see him, like, he has a huge smile on his face. He's loving being at the rink. It's not just a simple thing. Well, I'm going to love it. You have to mentally choose to love it and make it a choice every day that you look forward to going to the rink. Because if it ever becomes like work or becomes like a regular job, you'll never succeed, because it just, you run out of enthusiasm and energy and the amount of stress that it takes on your family and different things around you. It just doesn't seem to work. But when you can mentally convince yourself how much you enjoy it, and then once you kind of fake it long enough, you really, really start to enjoy it. Not that you're always faking. It's just one of those days when it's hard. You convince yourself how much you love it, and then you do. And you're watching Patty. It's just I'm excited for him. I feel like a kid watching him do it, because it's such an incredible thing. And he's of all the people, like, the most humble, just approachable, easygoing guy, just unassuming, and such an incredible player. And you have to be able to skate like him, I think, to be able to do it too. So being able to skate like him, he was the guy that everyone would ask if you could, you know, if you could skate like anyone in the league. It was him and Scotty Niedermeyer. Those two guys are the guys that, for the most part, in my generation would always mention.
I'll hand it back to you, Jeff, in one sec. Yeah. But it occurs to me, Jeff, that they probably played each other a good career's worth. Like, in that same division, you probably played Patty Marleau 200 times or something. Anyway, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, we did. We played each other a lot.
I am curious as well, Shane. I mean, people can look at you and say, hey, you know, that guy played 1,500 games, and that's huge. When you describe hockey players, like, when you, like, pick one stat to describe someone, do you look at goals? Do you look at points? Do you look at games played? Because I know from talking to hockey players, as long as I've done this, had this goofy career, that is a real badge that you guys wear. Oh, that guy played 800 games. That guy played 1,200 games. That guy played 500 games. That guy played 1,500 games. Like, that really is a badge for you guys, isn't it?
Well, it is, and yet it's so funny, because it tends to be whatever you don't really have, you look at that. So for me, if I look at it, it's always obviously going to be probably goals and points. So you look at the guys who got 1,000 points, and you got and then guys that, you know, there's some guys that had incredible, you know, seasons where they'd have, you know, 85 points in a year or 100 points in a year, and you look at them and you're like, oh my gosh, look at the points that he has. And then those guys will look and be like, oh my gosh, you played for 22 years or whatever. It always seems that as hockey players, we always want to admire what everyone else has done. But that is something that, for me, when I say Patty Marleau, I'm going to say the number of games he played, because it's just an incredible number. And It is one of those things. And playing, our game's hard to play. It's so physical and so intense. Like, that's the part that we do take pride in showing up and being available. And that's something that, what's the best ability is the availability. And I love that. I think that's huge. I wish I could have scored more, though, still, no matter what.
Before we conclude, I want you to get a couple of thoughts in about your son. Tell us about Ja. He's going to ASU, right?
Yes, he is. He's going to ASU next year. He's really excited. His team is, they got two games left. They play tonight and tomorrow night in the USHL. Then they have a playoff, which this year the USHL has become, as a league, such a kind of an anomaly in the fact that they've played 54 games. They have the playoffs coming. They have a ton of players from the Ivy Leagues came back. All the players from the Ivy Leagues that were 19 and 20-year-olds came back and played in their league. They had a bunch of kids from the OHL and from the Western League and from the Q. So that league is a really, it's been a great league, and he's enjoyed it. And, they have a really good team, and they got a good chance. I think they won their league, and they got a chance to hopefully figure out how to win the playoffs.
Yeah, Chicago Steel is a powerhouse in the USHL. That is a fantastic program. If I could ask you about one player other than your son off that roster, and just, you know, because we're, you know, a Toronto-based radio show here and people will know the name, and, you know, he's a 15-year-old playing in the USHL. How did Adam Fantilli look this year? You know where I'm going, right?
I knew exactly. Well, between him and Owen Powers, so Owen played on the team last year with Josh.
Yeah.
And so... And then this year, with Adam playing there, Ryan Hardy's done a pretty incredible job with getting players. Adam, like early on in the season, we were watching the games. My wife and I were watching the games, and she's like, "Holy cow, that 19 can get around the ice. He can skate, eh?"
Oh yeah.
And I was smiling. I'm like, "Yeah, he can get around the ice well. Like he makes plays. Yeah, he's been incredible. He's the thing about Chicago is that they focus so much on development, and not just like development of your skills, but as a person and as a human and being a teammate, and the importance of being able to fit into a dressing room. And at the beginning of the year, they didn't even let Owen play that much at the beginning of the year, or didn't let Adam play that much at the beginning of the year. You learn to kind of feel like you have to earn this. And then now he's playing a ton and he's been incredible. But they've handled it in such a great way. And then Adam has just grown in leaps and bounds. And it's funny, when you watch him play the Team USA, he always has a little bit extra jump in his step, and he's always got a little bit more to give, because those boys they're kind of the similar age to him, as him being probably the youngest guy in the league. And he's going to be a special player.
Oh, he's I watched him play tons in the GTHL. His last year with the Red Wings, almost single-handedly defeated a powerhouse Don Mills Flyers team that had, you know, Shane Wright and Brennan Othman and Brant Clark, like a powerhouse team, and he almost took them apart single-handedly. Anyway, Shane, congratulations on being named to the Team Canada Management Squad. Good luck in the selection process, and good luck when you get to Riga. Thanks so much for checking in.
Hey, thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure is ours. Here he is, the great Shane Doan. As you mentioned, 1,540 games. I love the response, though. Whatever you don't have is the thing you talk about first. Like, dude, if you played 1,500 games in the NHL,
yeah,
would that not be the first thing you would, like, the one stat, like, no matter what else you did? I don't know. I just value this the idea of that consistency and showing up. I value it a lot more than I did when I was younger. Like, I would look at Cal Ripken and go, like, so what? He showed up every day. Yeah. You know, like, what a stupid, of course, I'm a dumb kid. What a stupid thing to say. And then you get a little bit older and you realize, through the grind of life, being able to do that every single day is an accomplishment.
Well, and how about playing the way Shane Doan played to play that many games? Like, you know, respect Patty Marleau, but like, you know, he's not in the pits the way that Doan was for his 1540. Yeah. So, you know, it's incredible to have played as many games as he did. Honestly, Jeff, I sometimes like hobble getting out of bed. My back is sore. I'm 38, and I'm like, ugh, well, I did play, you know, hockey till I was 26. I can't imagine having played 1,500 games till I was 40 years old. Good Lord.
It's great. We'll step away. We'll come back with Brian Burke, Pittsburgh Penguins president of hockey operations. Penguins keep on rolling. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Quick note, if you missed it, Joe Thornton yesterday caught Matthew Perreault with a hit that you might look at and go, yeah, maybe, maybe not. NHL Department of Players Safety fining Joe Thornton just over $3,000. That is the max allowable under the CBA for his hit, or as it's titled in the release, interference on Winnipeg's Matthew Perreault. So for those that thought he may get a game or more, not so fast. He'll be available for the Toronto Maple Leafs come Saturday as they face off against the Winnipeg Jets again. Pleased to be joined now by the star of the Hey Berkey phenomenon and one of the people tasked with keeping the Pittsburgh Penguins train on the rails and has done a great job so far, along with the general manager, Ron Hextall. He is the Penguins president of hockey operations. He is Brian Burke, and he joins us on Hockey Central. How are you today, Berkey?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing very well. We just had a chance to catch up with Shane Doan a couple of seconds ago, and the conversation went a bunch of different places, and it turned to the Patrick Marleau situation and the 1,769 games now, breaking Gordie Howe's record as far as NHL games go. And I'm curious from your point of view, when you look at a stat line, games played, goals, assists, points, PIMs, and then whatever other descriptive stats you want to use, where do you put games played when you're evaluating a player or you're looking back at a player? Where do you put that stat? How much do you value that?
Well, it's a record that's, I think, never going to be broken. To play that many games, you have to be a good player or else teams don't want you. So number one, you got to be good enough that teams keep signing you for, you know, 20 years, basically. And so you've got to be a productive player. Then you've got to be a durable player that doesn't get hurt. And he's had a really durable career. And third, you've got to have intangibles that teams want, too. So you've got to be a quality teammate. So this is a legit record of a – he eclipsed the record of a great player. And I think it's fantastic.
Well, I think, Berkey, you need those same things to stay in the league in the front office, and you've been hanging around for quite some time, so kudos to you for that. I guess I'll ask you about your guys' acquisition. At the deadline there, you grabbed Jeff Carter. What was it that you liked about him, and how have things gone so far?
Well, he's been really good for us. I mean, I think the creativity that went into getting Jeff Carter was, you know, all falls on Ron Hextall. A year ago, they approached Jeff Carter at the deadline and said, do you want to go anywhere? And he said, if you trade me, I'm going to retire. So this year, Hexy reached out to Rob Blake well before the deadline, knowing that that might be the reaction, but wanting to plant the seed, and said, would Jeff ever want to come here? And I think if that hadn't happened, if they dropped us on Jeff, you know, an hour before the deadline or a day before, he might not have been interested. So I think it was real good GMing by Hexy, and I think that planting that seed and letting Jeff get comfortable with coming to join our group was the reason the deal was able to be put together, and he's been excellent for us.
So what changed, do you think? I'm asking you to speak on behalf of Jeff Carter here, but what changed for him in a year, you think?
I don't know. Maybe the Kings made it clear to him that he was not going to be back. Whether that's a buyout or whatever, I don't know what happened in the front office back door workings there. So I don't really know. I just know or believe that had Hexy not made that initial call, we probably wouldn't have gotten this player. And he's been really good for us. He scored once, but he's given us size. He can still skate. Like, you know, he skates beautifully for a big man. And it belies his age, how well he skates, and he's made good plays. We got him taking key faceoffs on the right side, shorthanded. He's been 56%, I think, going into last night, or 58%, something like that. So he's given us a faceoff dimension, a size dimension, a speed dimension, and a depth dimension. Now, Malkin skated with the big group today, so we're getting healthy. Mm-hmm. And so did Gaudreau, who's been a key guy for us down the stretch here. So we're getting close to getting him back, and then all of a sudden you've got three centers. You start Sid, Malkin, Carter, or you put Carter on the wing. Kapanen came back last night and scored, so it's a pretty good group of forwards with this addition, and it gives the coach a lot of options.
Yeah, that's obviously a very deep group of forwards, and this team has had success with that sort of makeup in the past. I then turn my eye to your guys' defense, which the thing that stands out to me is just how good Chris Letang has been for you guys this year. He's playing almost 25 minutes a night. He's coming up on 40 points here. I don't know if you'd call it a resurgence on the pass, but just tell us a little bit about what he's done for this team so far and why things seem to be going so well for him.
Well, our first pair, when we first got to Pittsburgh, the team was kind of stumbling around because Brian Dumoulin was hurt, and he's a key guy for us. So the first defense pair is Dumo and Chris Letang, and together they're really a formidable duo because they're both big, they can both skate, they can both make intelligent plays. But Chris Letang is kind of a freak of nature. Like, he's so strong and skates so well. Big right shot defenseman with offensive skill that can eliminate people. He's been terrific.
Brian, let's go back to a couple of nights ago, and I'm curious about two Brian Burkes. Now, if Brian Burke was still working with us and we were watching the Pittsburgh New Jersey game from a couple of nights ago, not last night, and the Penguins go up 6-0, and then the New Jersey Devils start to claw it back and it turns into a 7-6 game, you and I might have left the studio saying, "Hey, that was a lot of fun. Hey, that was a pretty interesting game that turned into there." What did Brian Burke, the president of hockey operations, think of that game?
Well, this is a family show, so I'll have to keep my responses appropriate. I think every expletive that I know probably was yelled out. I'm old school, right? Like, it's 6-0 going into the third. My view is we should be trying to preserve the shutout for the goaltender, and that should be our only goal. So get pucks out, get pucks deep, block shots. And I think our guys thought, well, it's a real porous team. We'll get a couple more points each. And that mindset just doesn't sit too well with me, so I was not happy. I was very proud of our group last night. We played a great third period with a lead, really locked it down, and I was proud of our guys and impressed with our group. That's how you play with a lead. But, I wasn't happy the other night. That's not how you play when you're up 6-0. It happened to us early in the year. We got up 3-0 against Philly real early, like 3 minutes into the game, and ended up losing that game.
Yeah.
What's that?
It just becomes point night in the players' minds, right? Like, here's my night to grab my three.
Yeah, they're porous tonight. They're not playing good D. The goaltender's not that sharp. Let's get a couple more on them. And I'm old school. Like, I know when I played, going into the third period, if you're up 6-0, the captain would have said to the room, "We're playing for the goaltender now, boys. Everyone play it safe, play it smart." And that's what we did last night. And when you're doing that, the other team, you know this, Justin, the other team has to press anyway. They're down 6-0. They've got to press. You're going to get 2-on-1s. If you play good defense, it's going to turn into offense, so you will get some chances. But you've got to start. Your orientation has to be, we are going to defend. And then your chances will come. They always do. When you push, that's the danger of falling behind in games. When you start chasing the game, you have to take chances, and the other team gets a chance to capitalize on those. So my message to the players would have been, look, let's lock this down, and then some pucks are going to pop out. We're going to block a shot or two. They're going to get caught with the deep pinching in, and we're going to get a couple of chances. And if we get them, that's fine. But let's make sure we don't give up those chances.
Yeah. So one of the things we knew that you guys were going to do when you went in to take over, you and Hexy, it was like evaluate the situation, see what the team has and is, and then sort of make your mind up about what you want to do with everything. Has there been anything that has surprised you about a particular player, someone you didn't know as well, just watching from a distance, that now that you're there every day, you go, oh, man, I didn't know that this player could do this or played like that?
Well, I think I'd have to single out several players. Freddie Gaudreau is a guy that I hadn't seen since Nashville a few years ago and had kind of forgotten what a versatile guy he is. He's been really good. Mark Jankowski had a slow start when we got there. He was scuffling a bit, but he's been good lately. But two guys I would single out are Teddy Bluger, who you think of as a checking, shutdown guy, but he's a really good player in all three zones. And then two other guys, Colton Stevier has turned into a critical penalty killer for us, and Zach Aston-Reese, who's turned into a critical penalty killer for us. So there are guys that I knew, but I didn't realize their contribution. But What impressed me the most is we lost six of our top nine forwards and didn't skip a beat. Everyone just said, no one complaining, no one saying, oh, poor us. Everyone just grabbed the rope and pulled harder. So every night someone else would step up. Aston Reese one night, Sevier the next night, Jankowski the next night, Goodrow the next night. And so like it was became a contest of who's going to answer the bell here. And it was really impressive to watch. So we're not worried about our depth now. Going down the stretch here, we're down to, what, nine games, I think. And we're up 9 points on the Rangers, which would be for the final playoff spot. So we've put ourselves in a really good position. Now is the time to keep our foot on the gas, close it out, make sure we're in, and then we can look at resting some people maybe or getting the both goaltenders some work, whatever. But the other thing that impressed me since we came in, when we came in, goaltending was a question mark. And I remember in my interview, I said, I'm not sure the goalies are good enough. But since we came in, and we've had nothing to do with this, I mean, I remember if I were still playing and I were lacing up my skates and I heard Brian Burke on an interview taking credit for even one of those points that they've earned since I got there, I would feel sick to my stomach. I'd be really sour about that. So we had nothing to do with it. But at that point, the team, Tristan Jarry said, nope, we're going to solve this. And Casey DeSmith said the same thing. They've both been terrific. So, no, it's a lot of people have surprised me. And that goes to, Justin, you know this. You don't know your team until you know your team.
Right.
And I'm sure there's people driving in their cars going, boy, is that a stupid comment. But it's not. Because if you had asked me the day before I got this job to tell you about the Pittsburgh Penguins, I could have gone through player by player with no notes and told you all about the Pittsburgh Penguins. This guy's good at this. This guy's good at that. But when you practice every day with the team and watch practice and travel with the team and watch them interact and see who the leaders are and you're around the team, you get a true appreciation for the team. And this is a good bunch of guys that work real hard.
Well, then I want to ask you about one that I'm always fascinated with and always had always been, you know, cheering for to make it in the NHL and stick, and he has. You mentioned Teddy Bluger a couple of moments ago, and listen, I guess Thomas Vanek, I don't know if he was the first, but he was one of the first to do it with any sort of distinction, and that is European hockey players going to the United States to play college hockey, and that's their route to get to the NHL, not just staying in Europe. And Teddy Bluger did that, and you know, it was a second-round pick of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I love Latvians. I love them as people. I love them as hockey fans. I love them as players. You know, they can be very opinionated and aren't shy about sharing their opinions. Tell me something that I didn't know, or tell us something, Brian, that we should know about Teddy Bluger.
Well, can you imagine any of us sitting here and saying, I'm going to go to Latvia and play hockey and get my university degree in a second language. And this always impressed me about Jyrki Lumme. When I had Jyrki Lumme in Vancouver, his wife went to the PhD program in forestry at UBC, which is their most difficult program, in a second language and got her PhD. Hmm. I'm like, how do you do that? Like, I thought college was hard enough in English, in my first language. So with Teddy Bluger, like, here's a guy who comes over from Latvia, played in the U.S. Junior League, I think, USHL. And then he goes on to, I want to say, St. Cloud State or Minnesota State Mankato, works in the minors, and then suddenly bursts on the scene at the tender age of 26 or 27.
Yep.
And you're like, this guy has no chance. And he's just such a smart player, and he works so hard. He's a good kid. One fact that I think people will be, I don't know if Teddy's a chess player, but one fact that people might find interesting is our team is really big on chess. We've got a bunch of players that play chess a lot. And we have two chess boards set up when we travel in the players' room. And these guys play a lot of chess. So our last road trip, I was walking by, and Zach Aston Reese, who played at Northeastern, was playing John Marino, who played at Harvard. And I said, how's this going? And they said, oh, fine. I said, well, I'm betting on Northeastern. And Zach beat him.
Who's the – just before we get the break here, Brian, do you know who the best player on the team is yet?
I'm guessing – it's either Zach or Malkin. Apparently, Gino likes to play chess and is pretty good at it.
That's awesome. Great little tidbit there. Brian, we're out of time. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Really appreciate it. And listen, your division is tight, man. Like, your division is real tough. And you guys are right in there in that top mix. Good to see what you and Hextall are doing there. Keep it going with the Penguins, and we'll check back in soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Best of luck,
Brian. Brian Burke. He is the president of hockey operations for the Pittsburgh Penguins. We miss him around here, but boy, is he ever doing some great work with the Pens right now. Big win last night against the New Jersey Devils, 5-1. Before that, a 7-6 thriller, as Berkey mentioned, that led to some expletives coming out of Berkey's mouth. How to defend a 6-goal, the worst lead to carry into the third period, right? Justin Bourne, the dreaded 6-bagel lead going into the third. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Okay, welcome back to the program here. Just a quick 60 seconds to wrap up. Smith and Jones here at the top of the hour. Quick little recap of what you saw last night, what you expect tomorrow. Winnipeg Jets, Toronto Maple Leafs. Last night, 5-3 victory, really a 4-3 game with an empty netter. And then tomorrow, Hockey Night in Canada, Justin.
Well, I'll focus on Nick Foligno, who I think is going to be a big addition for this team and play a big role. You know, a little rusty out of the gates, I thought, and he said as much himself about his own game. But I'm excited to see him fall into a place of comfort. He mentioned, you know, it's a team that feels like it's going places and going to be excited to be a part of it. So I'm looking forward to him taking a step and being better in his second appearance.
Were you disappointed he did not wear the Mike Foligno Northlands helmet as stylized previously by the likes of Lanny McDonald and Stan Mikita and Denny Potvin?
Yes, and there's no other detail there. Yes, I was disappointed.
Very good. I hope you weren't disappointed in the show. Smith and Jones next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.